Welcome to Metacast. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Today's topic is conferences. What to do when you're there, how to do it when you're there, and where to go. And things like that. We're going to start over.
No, we're not. No, you got it covered. Josh has it. It's early. So Metacasters, to set the stage, it is, let's see, what time? It is 7:07 in the morning.
I got up 5 minutes earlier this morning.
So no
that's
way.
Thrown me off my group. Yeah, Bob said.
You're off your game?
Bob said you can't be late today.
I did say you can't be late.
When I'm late.
Did that put undue pressure on you, Josh?
It did. I had to set my alarm 5 minutes earlier. And I thought about skipping breakfast, but I couldn't.
I wouldn't want to talk to you in the morning without breakfast, Josh. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it's early. So we're a little punchy sometimes. So you need to take. Well, I'm a little punchy sometimes. So y'all need to take that into consideration when you're listening to us. But we were talking about conferences, just conference etiquette, and the topic is not around. So I'm not talking about like ivory soap conferences or library card conferences or anything like that, or the Republican conference.
Oh.
So we're not talking about political conferences. We're talking about technology conferences. So programmers, testers, there's a bunch of them around. And I think a lot of folks go to those things and just maybe don't know what to do. So why don't we start with Josh? How do you pick sessions? So should you pick sessions in advance?
Yeah, I try and map it out, and really what I try and do is, and actually, to me, the best conferences are the ones where you feel like you need to take somebody with you to cover it all. Because there's been so many times where, as I look at a schedule and all of the different tracks, most of them have like 3 and 4 tracks, trying to pick the right one, there's always like 3 or 4 blocks where there's like 5 sessions you want to go to. So I have always found it best to not go by myself and try and divide and conquer some of that. And then with technology now, you text or tweet that person and say, hey, this one's really great, maybe you should come over, or this one isn't working for me, where are you at? Or hey, I'm at this expo hall and just found this, and come and catch me up here, and things like that. So I'm a big fan of going in groups, certainly to help tackle some of that problems. Specifically to your question, I do try and map it out, just because I need a bit of a game plan on every day. What room am I? Where am I going to be? Who am I going to listen to? And trying to make sure I don't hear the same thing twice or get the same pitch twice or something like that. So that's how I come at it.
I actually think you hit two birds. So how do you qualify a conference? How do you pick one? And so one of the things that you said was, if you map it out, and if you find, and I do this, but I don't do it. I don't do it thinking about it. I just
right.
do it. But if you only find like one session per time slot that's of interest to you, and you're really and the other ones are not interesting, whether you're going in a group or individually,
right.
that probably is a lower quality conference. That's saying to you, there's not a lot of active content going on there.
Right.
You actually want to look at the program and pick 2 or 3. You want to be conflicted.
Exactly.
You want to be conflicted per time slot.
Yeah.
And I think the more conflicted you are, the one, that's compelling you to maybe take a group if you can afford to do that. But two, it's telling you that it's an active content conference. Because, again, if something fails, I have this walk out and find it. So if you go to a session, you should always have a primary session and a backup, an
right.
active backup, so that in case the primary, the speaker, isn't doing very well, or the title doesn't match the content,
right.
or whatever, that you have another place to go and have that active content. The Agile conference, just using that as an example, because we're so Agile-centric, most of the time, it has like 16, I think, or 18 tracks. And I always go there conflicted.
Right.
I've taken seven or eight people there.
Yeah.
And we sort of mapped out, someone has the leadership track, or two people have that. Someone has the testing track. Someone has the product management track, the UX, the usability track. And then we have primaries and backups. But they almost have too much active content. I almost get overly conflicted there.
Right.
So.
And that's a good thing, right? That's exactly what you're looking for, where you just, like, how am I going to choose? Which one am I going to go to? So that's always that's a great factor of if you can find a conference where you're like, which one am I going to go to? And you're scratching your head for an hour trying to figure that out. Go to that one.
I think you're right on. And if not, just skip it. Go find another one. There's multi-tiered conferences around. I like to get bang for the buck. So to me, the cost is a factor. But if you're going to go, you want the highest quality. So for example, from my point of view, STAR is this QA conference. It's mm-hmm. STAR East and West, put on by SQE. And there's a bunch of QA conferences or testing conferences. And with all respect, they're not bad.
Right.
But I think STAR is the leading provider of the conferences. And you'll see that with the caliber of the speakers. You'll see that with the caliber of the workshops.
Right.
Et cetera. Oh, you know, that brings up something. What about workshops over track? So there's this notion of half-day, full-day workshops. Right. And then like 60-minute or 90-minute track talks. What do you think is more valuable?
I've never had a successful workshop.
Really?
Quite honestly, yeah.
Ever?
I've only done two.
Okay.
But neither of them went very well. So I'm
You should attend one of mine.
Should I?
Metacasters, I can't even describe. I should have had a camera ready for the look in the man's face. It was priceless, as the commercial says, and that was intention. Yes, indeed, it was a priceless look.
I have been in some of your workshops, maybe not at a conference, but I've been through the Bob Galen
shtick.
Yes. I've even incorporated some of that shtick into my shtick.
You sold some of the shtick?
Yeah, I did.
Josh, I'm surprised at you.
Yeah, you know.
But length. So have you had good track talks? So what are you saying? Like the longer stuff is not valuable?
To me, it's harder as a presenter to prepare high quality content for longer sessions like that, especially in a workshop. You really have to me, people that do workshops well, that's what they do. Right. I think if you're going to get somebody that has another job and speaks kind of every once in a while, I think they're going to have a harder time with the longer sessions or with the workshop because they aren't
able
to dedicate
that. Well, you're switching gears. You're talking about like the presenter side. So I agree with you. If you're presenting,
right.
A part-time presenter should not do workshops. But as an attendee, what do you think?
Right. So I think if you can find somebody that has a workshop that's what they do, then that's going to be very beneficial. But the ones I've been to haven't been.
So they weren't
that
experienced.
Way, right?
They weren't experienced.
So it's been a presenter that was trying to get a little bit more in. And so they had a workshop, like a half-day workshop.
No.
And it was basically a slightly expanded version of the session that they had the next day.
So you're that's a good case that you want to smell through those workshops. And you want to look, I think, to your point. So sort of best practices would be looking for name presenters. That's the place where you want name presenters.
Yeah.
Right? That's the place where you want a workshop. So it's not bad to have that workshop have been presented a few times before.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I've had bad luck, and I know people that love it, right? And that's what they go for, and they actually don't like the sessions as much. But I'm kind of the opposite. I just haven't had luck yet. So I've been burned once or twice. So I'm a little bit hesitant to spend that extra cash on things like that.
It oscillates, too, from now I'm switching gears from a speaker's perspective. So Metacasters, both Josh and I, you know, speak publicly. I do it a little more than Josh does, but we've both gotten out there. And so from a speaker's perspective, it was weird. A few years ago, there were one-day workshops, a lot of one-day workshops.
Right.
Then there was this inclination that the feedback from the attendees was, I don't like investing in a whole day. So independent of the content, They felt like they wanted a shortened version. So now you see a lot of half day workshops that are so you have a choice in a day to go to two sessions.
Right.
So the conference they were putting pressure on the speakers to sort of squish your content down. I almost thought it was going to get to pure half days mm-hmm. for the workshop parts.
Right.
And then the track sessions have stayed about the same. Each conference somewhere between 60 minutes, 75 minutes, and 90 minutes, the different conferences gravitate there.
Right.
But now I've noticed a trend where we're going back to not just one-day workshops, but two. At STAR, they had a couple of two-day workshops,
wow.
An Agile testing two-day workshop. I think in Agile, they had a certification workshop, a three-day that started on Sunday. So they're bringing back, it's sort of like they're going to the extremes. You have immersion, right, for more than one day, and then you have half days and just a sampling of one day.
So it sounded, based on your reaction, that you have had opposite luck with workshops than I have.
Well, I give them a lot. And no, I've had a crapshoot. Yeah, sometimes you can go in. I know, I agree. Sometimes I've been incredibly disappointed. I had a half-day workshop or a three-hour thing at Agile with a person who will remain unnamed, but but one of the signatories of the Agile Manifesto, and he basically sucked. He was terrible. And what he did in the workshop, he provided, I think in 3.5 hours, he probably spoke for 10 minutes or less. And what he did is he kept throwing ideas. He'd put a slide up, and then he'd throw us into groups. So discuss this at your table for 30 minutes. And then we'd do a one-minute debrief. And then here's another slide. Discuss this at your table. And I went there, and maybe this was unfair. Right. So you can slap me around if I'm being unfair. But I went there to learn from him.
Yeah, so it sounds like he's farming out research to you guys.
Yeah, it was, and it felt atrocious. It felt like you went into some place and you really were, I was eager.
Yeah.
I attended this workshop eager to learn from a master, and that is no BS. And I came out of there saying, I don't know what he was trying to do, but it was ineffective, right? I felt cheated.
Right.
I absolutely felt cheated.
Yeah, that's...
So, and to me, so again, it's a crapshoot sometimes. So here's someone who knows how to, and I know he knows how to run a good workshop.
Right.
But in this particular case, I think it's real easy to, I think it's easy sometimes in collaborative workshops to lose your balance.
Right.
And I think that was one of the sort of the tricks there. And maybe that's another thing is depending on the type of workshop. Do you want a talking head workshop? On the other end of the spectrum is a totally collaborative or situational workshop, and then is it somewhere in between?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a listener and a thinker during those things, so I prefer content, active content that's given to me that I can process.
So you want to be talked to?
I do.
You don't want to jump around the room counting pennies and flipping them into the ceiling and measuring the...
I do not.
The distribution of distance to see what how it is proportionate to estimation of software.
Correct. I want info flying at me.
Okay.
Right, that I can be scribbling notes as fast as I can, and then it spurns a thought somewhere on the other... So I've got another pad of ideas and how I want to apply it back at home and how we're going to do this and things like that. So I just want that fire hose of info.
Actually, you know what? I mean, you backed into a really interesting point is know thyself. So there's different learning. Some people really... So I'm sort of like you, but I want a little bit of... I want real world lessons, too. I want to be able to talk to... I get value talking to people and sharing lessons learned.
Mm-hmm.
So I like a little bit of collaboration. But if you push me all the way to the game, I was at another Agile conference, and another person who remained nameless had these little toys. So we were going to do exploratory testing, which is a testing technique. And she handed out, what were they, little boxes that had numbers. It was like Scrabble. It was a set of Scrabble modules that if you put them together, they would be flashing letters and you could spell. Very small. And she handed them out in little boxes with instructions and said, test this. And for the next 2 hours, we were supposed to be exploratory testing it. And it drove me absolutely up the wall, right? Because it was just gamesmanship. It was totally on. And some people, but the real point there is some people, like in the reviews, they freaking love that,
right?
And I was sitting there like pour boiled oil on my head. But I think learning types come into play.
Yeah,
that's what you're circling around. And I think know yourself, and then it comes back to know the instructor. So I think some instructors are more talking head.
Mm-hmm.
Some instructors are more the term is experiential.
Yeah.
If you see experiential, you know, Metacasters, experiential implies that you're not going to get a lot of talking to you. You are going to just jump, and you're going to have to think about what the heck did I just learn?
Yeah.
And you may come up empty. What the heck did I just learn by playing games or something?
Yes,
like that
is the Metacast word word of the day.
Experiential.
Yes.
Yes. So for you, that's a danger word.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, you do not want to do experiential workshops.
No, yeah.
Right. And so I, as a presenter, I'm sort of, I actually am probably, I do breakout sessions. I'm probably like 70% content to, mm-hmm. along your, and then I do some breakout sessions.
Right.
If you ever look at, you've looked at my slides.
Yeah.
I have higher, you can see it in the way I construct slides. I don't put pictures. I don't put three words. I try, they're information dense.
Yeah.
So I try not to be too dense.
Just let that slide.
We'll leave that go. I'm throwing these pauses in there this morning. And you're speechless. And I try not to be too dense, but I do want folks, like, if the, you attend one of my talks, I want you to actually be able to look at the slides 6 months later, and the slides could sort of remind you of what we went through.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've ever attended a keynote or something where, which is pictures,
yeah.
6 months later, you have, unless it was incredibly compelling,
right.
you forget what the topic
is. Yeah, I go back and forth on how I prepare my slides for talks like that. I don't like slide after slide of bullet points personally, but I do like data on there. I've seen people that have like one word per slide and they're like talking,
yeah.
clicking through the slides, and it's like, okay, that's just kind of annoying.
Yeah.
But I do like less data per slide, but I also don't like a slide barrage where it's like you're just trying to just catch up and see what's going. So that's a tough balance, at least.
I've oscillated a lot over that over the years. I used to be incredibly dense with my slides, and the font size was very small, and it was, and my intentions were good. It was to give people content, right?
Yeah.
But it was just, it was way too much content.
Yeah.
So I think all speakers try to get a balancing act. Have we beat that one to death?
I think so. So there's a couple directions that I'd like to go with that. So, walking out, what's your view on, your 10 minutes into an hour session, 15 minutes into an hour session, and you're just not getting that comfy, cozy feeling.
So let me do it from a speaker's perspective. Can I switch it
sure,
around?
Sure, yeah.
So, because I do right. this, and I've been doing it for like 10 years, so I want everyone to leave. I want to be there by myself. So, Metacasters, get the heck out. Leave. No. if you're not interested in Bob Galen, get the heck out. Hit the road. No, I think speakers. So when I was first doing the public speaking thing, it used to really scare me, because as people would get up and leave, it would distract me,
right?
And it would and I would start thinking, what did I do? Because I would connect back to what I just said,
right?
And it was really hard for me as a young, or as an inexperienced speaker. I was not young then.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, no,
I didn't think you were ever young.
No, not then. but I was inexperienced. It used to be a distraction, and I never said anything to the audience. But it is hard.
Right.
The other thing I would do is things like hold questions. So I would never want anyone to ask a question during the talk, because I was like on point. I'm like, you know, and I put the rules up. I had the rules slide.
Oh, no.
No, but it would take me off track because I was an inexperienced presenter. But then over the years, I started to be able to tolerate it. And then two, I started looking as a healthy, what I wanted to do is be a service provider as a speaker.
Right.
And the last thing I want is someone to feel compelled to sit in my talk. And I'll actually encourage, one thing I'll do is I'll tell people, I'm very clear up front what we're going to cover,
mm-hmm.
and how we're going to cover it.
Right.
And what I'm trying to do is within the first few minutes, let people know that if they're not there for the right content or the right presentation style,
right.
that I want to give them the opportunity to leave. So I'm really actually trying right. now, I'm trying as a speaker, I'm trying to encourage people to go find the talk that gives them the most value.
Right.
And I welcome it. And I even say that sometimes in the very beginning. Workshops, I'll do that often for a 3 or 4 hour investment.
Right.
I'll talk about that. So from a speaker's point of view, I think the mature speakers, I think immature speakers or inexperienced speakers struggle with it.
Right. And it can be distracting.
And I think anyone would struggle with it, right? Because it's distracting.
Right.
Well, and it's also, I mean, it's not applause.
Right, exactly.
Right? It's not applause. You know, if you hear the door, like...
Right, it is instant negative feedback.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
But I think the mature or the polished speakers really can handle it and welcome it, and they set up the stage for that.
Right.
As an attendee, what do you think?
So if you're unsure about a session, do the polite thing and don't sit front and center.
Ah.
You know, so sit kind of closer to
that.
Right. So that's how I attack it. If there's a session that I've been to this speaker's talks before and I know they're rock solid and I'm excited about the topic, I'll be more front and center. If I'm a little uncertain or I know there's a competing session that I'm right on the edge with,
get to the back.
I'll sit in the back right by the door.
You're absolutely right.
I get up, I slide out, I'm not as distracting. And I do that because I've been in that situation before, right? So I understand that you see that door open and the light flows into the room that's normally darkened a little bit and everybody, you know, people turn around or the door slams and all those type of things. So I always try and slide out as easily as possible. So if you're unsure about the value of a session, just think a little bit ahead and sit towards the back or right near the door so you aren't walking through the middle of the room or walking in front of the screen or anything silly like that.
I would agree with you, though. So do that. So pre-plan.
Yeah.
So we talked about it earlier. Have a primary, have a backup, have two backups.
Right.
Because you may actually find that the next one you go to might be full. Mm-hmm. So another phenomenon sometimes is you can't get in.
Right.
Or you can get in, but you're standing, so it's uncomfortable. So you can't predict because you're going to be going to things late. So having fallbacks, I think, is a really good thing. Sometimes as a speaker, I'm doing this small talk before a session starts, mm-hmm. and I honestly tell people, not just for my session, but for the conference, I'm like, this is for you. I remind them because I think attendees feel locked into a session. Once they go to a session, they feel locked into that session.
Yeah.
So then if it's bad, they're very reluctant to leave. And I try to remind them.
Get up and go.
And I'm like, the etiquette at a conference, it's your conference. You paid money.
Yeah,
we are here for
thousands of
dollars. We are not here for me. We are here for you.
Yeah.
So every hour session, you know, if there's 10 things to pick from, go pick what you want. And if you bounce from two or three things, don't be embarrassed whatsoever. Go get the value.
Right.
It goes with your game planning. I mean, if you send a small group, it's the same phenomenon.
Right.
Go plan. They may be rotating to different sessions.
Right.
For every hour of time, I think go grab what you want.
Yeah. So it's, to me, it's apply agile to a conference.
Yep.
Have a plan, but know that things change and you get in a session and it's bombing. Or you are in a session and you get a text message from a friend or a colleague that says, you got to come to this session. This guy is killing it. And there's stuff I've never even thought of. You got to come see this stuff. And you got to get up and go because you're paying thousands of dollars.
To go to that conference.
Yeah, so take advantage of the money that's spent.
Absolutely. What about questions?
Again, because I'm a fire hose guy, I'd like those to be held towards the end as opposed to changing direction and maybe I'm not getting the content that I signed up
for. So you're intolerant of sort of those taking those little directional changes that the questions might...
It sounds very unagile, but yeah.
Okay, it does.
It does. Josh. It's sad. I kind of want to slap myself.
So stay on plan. Stay on. Damn it, give me that water.
It's 1 hour. You know, it's like a sprint, right? So I signed up for a sprint. I got that sprint goal for 1 hour. You know,
I would have a different, you know, like I said, I used to hold questions. Now I think I think it's a lot of this stuff is speaker dependent and experience dependent. I think my sessions, so I like to ask questions now. In fact, I ask questions of the audience.
Right.
And you know that's my style.
Yep.
And I try to get feedback going. And then it's my job to keep us on point. So for the fire hose guys, it's my job to make sure that I give them what they signed up for. But at the same time, I like to have a variable path.
Yeah, see, now, it's tough because when I'm speaking, I'm in the same vein as you. I want people to ask those questions so that I can give them what they're looking for.
But don't you stay on point for the talk, though, too?
I do.
Aren't you doing both at the same
time? It's a challenge, but it's like when you add a feature to a release, right? You don't get any extra. Yeah, something has to give, right? So you can do your best and try and keep it on point, but something has to give. You have to give up a little.
I would agree with you. Well, you're prioritizing. I think my agileness comes in. I have the slides as a backlog in my head,
right?
And I've been, you know, I'll skip slides at the end or I'll skip over content. So I think that is the trade-off.
Yeah.
I think it creates a more vibrant talk and stuff. So I would encourage Metacasters to ask questions.
Oh yeah,
It's up to the speaker to be. So I know every one of us has gone into a talk where someone was asking 20 questions. You know, they dominate. So you have these people who dominate.
Yeah.
That's actually another reason. If you have a speaker, forget content, but if they're not a good facilitator and they're allowing the attendees to hijack, either say that in a question form, like, why aren't you facilitating better? Which is kind of embarrassing. Or, and I want you to stay on point, or leave.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it's the speakers, and so you'll get good speakers, and then you'll get good facilitative speakers. So I think I'm okay at keeping people, and you get disruptive people in audiences all the time.
Right.
Not intentionally disruptive, but they just feel like, so there's some people who feel like the conference is totally for them, and they're going to, in a room of 100 people, there's one gentleman or lady who feels like, you know, I'm going to get my $1,000 worth in this session, which is unfair to the other folks.
So that's always a delicate balance of, do I ask this now during the session, or do I wait and try and get to that speaker as soon as we're over, or try and track him down a little bit later and ask that question? That's where I struggle a lot. And I venture, because of the fire hose guy that I am, I lean towards asking later, trying to track them down, getting a card, sending them an email or something like that. So
is that fair game, Josh? Because a lot of folks don't. I mean, I was at Star East earlier this week, and I was counting conferences this year that I've done, and major conferences, and just to look at how much I've been investing in on the road.
Right.
And I've probably done 4 conferences so far this year. And so is it fair game to ask the speaker questions after the session? Is it fair game to bother them in the hallways?
So I think it's fair game to do it quickly, right? Because generally they have somewhere they have to be. They have an hour talk and they have like 5 minutes to get to the next talk they're giving or something like that. Or they have something else going on. So go up, ask a quick question, ask for a card, say, hey, I got a question. I know you're running. Can I get in contact with you? Is there a way? And normally they have a slide with a contact info. Try and jot that down. And if you do that, you don't even have to bother them. But if they didn't do that, which is kind of bad
form.
Yeah.
It is.
Then go and ask them a question. But don't, like, what I don't like is when somebody comes up with, like, 10 questions and there's, like, a line of people behind them.
Correct.
Yeah, that gets difficult.
So I'm agreeing with you, and I want to amplify it. As a speaker, I wish I was interrupted more.
Yeah.
No, I agree with what you said about the line. I hate the line because someone's dominating in the. It should be quick.
Yeah.
And then offline. And I tell people to email me questions a lot. But I want to encourage, I don't think I get interrupted enough as a speaker. I don't think I get emails offline enough. I would welcome more.
Right.
And if this Metacast results in a flood of emails, then I may change that position. But I'm a servant speaker. And most, probably 90% of the speakers I know are servant. You're a servant speaker. That's why we don't do it just to hear ourselves talk. We're trying to give back to the community.
Right.
We're trying to share lessons learned. So that was the after. I think you want to snag people. I think you want to, you know, have a mission. Be polite.
Yeah.
Be respectful. But gosh darn it, don't get your money's worth by questions in the session and dominate.
Right.
Get your money's worth by hanging out and conferring with people,
right,
with the speakers. I think they all welcome that.
Right. So the other thing that I want to talk about, and to me, when this happens, I know it's a great conference. When I walk out of sessions and there's a big cookie plate in between session rooms, I'm a happy guy, and it's stacked with cookies.
So food.
Food.
Oh, you were food. I can't. I just would have never guessed it. I would have never guessed that you were interested in the food.
I do place a lot of value on the mid-session snackery.
Right? Oh, come on. What about the lunch? There better be a spread for lunch. Come on, don't short shrift that.
Yeah, but that's the easy thing that.
But then you have the icing on the cake.
Yeah, so if somebody has good snackery going from session to session, yeah, that gets a thumbs up for me.
So there was a conference, software development best practices ran. There was a West version for developers, and there was an East version in Boston for a number of years. And for lunch, they would always have box lunches.
Yeah,
and it bugged the crap out of me, right? And I mean, they weren't bad box lunches, but. But they, to me, they were always taking, you'd pay $2,000 or, well, I, you know, you get a speaker entry, but people were paying $2,000, $2,500, and then they have the turkey table and the ham table and the tuna table. And I'm like, man, the effort there. Yeah, man, exactly. You guys are like stepping up to the plate.
Yeah, that's always frustrating.
And what was weird is the content. So here's a, and it's weird, like how you get different quality. So the content, I think, in software development best practices was excellent.
Right.
Particularly when I showed up, the years that I showed up.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
I've read that on, like, the New York Times.
I think it was there for 32 weeks in a row. Not that I'm counting. Enough of that. But but the content was high, but the food was, I mean, it's like, you know, this the box lunches. So there was no thought put into food.
Right,
I don't think there was any break. Which would break your heart. If there was any break,
I don't even need a break. I just, when I'm going from room 12 to room 35.
You want cookies during, you want a mid-morning cookie break, and you want a mid-air, I know the drill.
And a late-morning cookie break, and a later morning cookie break. And
but then I've gone to these conferences where the content is very low, but then they put out this huge spread, so they're trying to compensate. No, I swear to God, they have great food, but it's like you have mediocre speakers. And I think there's something in the middle. So so it's sort of it's a crapshoot. Food matters a lot. What about the time of sessions? I'm off, like, as a speaker. Well, the after lunch.
Like length?
The infamous. If you submitted a paper to a conference and we gave you proudly, so it's Monday to Friday, and we gave you the Friday after lunch slot, you would be so pleased with that, wouldn't
that
you?
That is almost as bad as the Friday at 4 p.m. slot.
Which is the death slot, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so those are always, those aren't good sessions to land as a speaker.
So does the, no. Or as an attendee. Right, as an attendee, they sort of aren't that great either. Yeah. So I think the timing of slots matters.
Yeah.
So manage your expectations.
Right. Okay. So here's a question. Expo Hall. Do you love them? Do you like them? Do you want as big and busy as possible? Do you go from vendor to vendor? How do you attack that?
I don't care. I've been to so many conferences and they're repetitious.
It's all the same.
It's sort of, the bingo cards. I care less about the bingo, you know, filling out the bingo cards to go for the Wii or something. Yeah. I do get a little bit of swag, like T-shirts. Yeah, I love Agile T-shirts, so I'll go. Like Version One is a vendor, and they do these customized T-shirts. Like Ship Happens, you can get a Ship Happens T-shirt versus an Agile Ninja T-shirt. And you can tell I have a variety of these. So the T-shirts attract me, but other than that, I'm not a salesy guy.
I don't go to try and find a vendor, personally. I kind of go through, I have three young kids, so I go sweat. Like, I get one of those bags and, like, take my arm and bring them all
over. And you're just swagging. You're just, I don't know if you get, I don't have a vendor, perspective. But I do know a couple vendors well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more leads than it is direct sales. Yeah. I think it's more reputation building and network building than it is direct, generating revenue from the event itself or directly like 30 days after the event.
Right.
Because I think it's just really hard. I mean, and those places are packed. They have limited hours, too. Did you ever notice that? Mm-hmm. It's not like they're open all day.
Right.
I always question the ROI of those things because it's like a fire hose. You have, I think at Star East, the vendors probably had not after hours. So there's the after hours things that they host.
Right.
But if you looked at core conference hours, I think they were open like 4 or 5 hours tops, like 4 hours.
Right.
Spread across 30-minute intervals or something like that. So it's, I almost stay away from it.
Yeah.
Some people, though, I know attendees, they're trying to do tool selection at a conference. I mean, literally, they're getting demos and they're doing serious tool selection at a conference.
I'm on board with you. I think leads on both sides is good. So, as a vendor, trying to get leads, and then as a as a purchaser, trying to get leads of, okay, who kind of has their head in the right space? But tool selection at a conference in an expo hall, I agree with you. Yeah. That's a challenge. So the other thing I want to throw out there is open space. Have you done it? Do you like it?
I want you to answer your own question. So
What is that?
What do you think of open space?
What is that?
Well, you know, I don't want to. So you can tell that I have something to say, and I'm trying to reserve it. And I want to hear what you have to
so
say.
So the reason I asked you is I have minimal experience. So I have only been to one, and it was real spotty because it was open space, and that's what I really.
So why don't we describe? Why don't you try to describe open space? Because I don't think everybody knows what
is. I'll describe open space as I saw it because I didn't know it before I walked in there, so I did a little bit of research to kind of figure it out. So it's kind of it's the ultimate agile conference. People present sessions. There were a couple of pre-planned sessions, but people got up and pitched a session, and every session got basically a sticky up on a board, and you ended up taking yours and trying to put it in a time slot, and so you just filled up the time slots, and then you showed up to talk, and if nobody else showed, there was no talking going on, or you went and found another one. So it was kind of an agile planning for a conference without any real agenda ahead of time.
So it's they call it an unconference.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is. There's no pre-planned agenda. Sometimes they submit ideas. So there's a local conference for product managers called Product Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Product Camp does have a wiki page where you can, as an attendee, you can submit a talk, if you will.
Right.
You don't submit the slides or anything. And you can just submit it so it's exposed so everyone who's attending can see at least what ideas are there. But then the day of the conference, then every one of the people that submitted a talk gets up and gives a 2-minute little PR of their talk. And then anyone else who has another idea can do the same thing. Mm-hmm. They just didn't put their idea on the wiki. Then what you do, which I'm sort of, it sounds like what you did. Then what you do is you plan. So now you have ideas. Then they vote. Then what you do is you dot vote, which you check. So if you have more ideas than you have time slots.
Right.
If you have less ideas than time slots, then that's easy. You just fill the ideas into the time. If you have more ideas, then you've dot vote and you take the higher, meaning the ones that got the most interest.
Right.
And you put them into attractive time slots. You might even repeat. I've actually seen it where, you know, the highest vote gathering talk is repeated twice because it might conflict with other things. So they double it up. And then you go away in the conference.
Right.
So what you're driving is it's just in time, or you're trying to be real time, just in time. So it's that lean thing. You're trying to be what, team focused.
Mm-hmm.
They have the what is it? The law of the 2 feet.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what if you
vote with your feet.
If you don't like a session, you vote with your feet. Out, yeah. So if there's 20 people in a session, and in the first 10 minutes, then there's just the speaker. The speaker has literally they emphasize go. Then it's not personal to the speaker. It was not a relevant topic. It didn't have interest. And so you're even encouraging the speaker to go find,
right?
The 2 feet apply to the speaker. That wasn't relevant. There's probably something else going on that's more relevant. Go find it.
Right.
I have mixed feelings about it. I don't like the unplanned nature of it. The fire hose guys. Very often you're slideless.
Mm-hmm.
At Star, it was funny. I did a lightning keynote at Star East, which was a 5-minute talk, and I was more. I'll come back to an aside, Josh, but I had more pressure on a 5-minute talk. Believe it or not, I was just wrapped around the axle. Well, you know me, how Metacasters? Am I verbose?
No.
So pinning me down to 5 minutes and putting me in a string. There were ten lightning keynotes in a string, and I was in the middle.
Right.
And I was like, holy cow! How am I going to? Am I going to have enough to say, or too much to say? And am I going to be focused?
Did you really ask yourself that question?
I did. I swear.
You were seriously asking yourself.
I actually left time. Okay, you know, smarty. I left time on the table.
Wow, look at
I
you.
I left time on the table wow, for impressive. The next guy. It
Did
was,
it hurt you to do
it
that?
It hurt immensely to leave time on the table. I was very time-centric. But a couple of the presenters, they and it's funny, they went naked. And I was laughing about the phrase, but they went without slides.
Yeah.
And they just talked.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, I missed an opportunity to go naked there.
Yeah.
Because 5 minutes is a much easier time.
Please frame. Warn me when you're doing that. So
I know.
I'm not there.
But I wanted to go naked.
Yeah.
I did. Well, no, just no slides.
Yeah.
And just talk. Because it's a different style.
Yeah.
And it's, and particularly in a keynote, a lot of pressure.
Right.
I think you would have a lot of learning there. So there's, it's naked presentations, I think, mostly at Open Space with a, and they're very experiential. Very often,
right.
Open Space is either a collaborative thing where you're round tabling and talking
right.
and sharing lessons learned, or you're doing experiential things like flipping, and I'm not kidding, flipping pennies,
yeah.
you know, writing user stories, testing, checking, you know, having games that illustrate flow in an agile team or something
right.
like that. That's a very common pattern in Open Space that is incredibly experiential because it's a naked, there's not a lot of...
Right.
In fact, I think usually Open Space, it's PowerPoints are frowned upon.
Right.
In fact, very often there's no projectors or something like that, or there's limited projector space and things.
Right.
I get torn. It goes back to my learning style,
yeah.
I think. What about... it's probably that's the feeling you torn as well.
Yeah, so to me, it sounds great, and... I think, like Agile, it's harder than it sounds to really deliver value. It's not a silver bullet. I think
yep.
the concept was great, but really executing it well is difficult.
I've heard, so there's a continuous integration Open Space, and they do it on a Saturday. I think it's a one-day conference, or is it 2 days? It's a one-day conference. It's signed up. People sign up. There's no topics pre-signed up. People show up. It's been running for maybe 7 years. It runs in North America, but it also runs internationally.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a Europe version of this thing. There's a Far East version of this thing. And I've sent continuous integration engineers to it. Lisa Crispin, one of the authors of Agile Testing, has gone on multiple years. I've never attended.
Yeah.
But I have never heard a bad thing from anyone.
Right.
All I've ever heard is that was the most outstanding
So I wonder if it's
ever,
the leadership that's really driving that.
I think it's leadership, and I think it's the attendees. So who attends that?
Right.
Lisa Crispin attends that, and she does
right.
talks. They have leading Paul DeVal is a guy who wrote a book on continuous integration. He's one of the drivers of
right.
it, the coordinators of it. I think the bar, and you don't see it on the wiki that they're raising the bar, but I think Open Space is very like attendee quality specific.
Yeah.
Right. And that one, I mean, I've never heard a poor review
right.
for that one. But at the same time, I know that if I went, I would probably struggle with it a little
right.
bit. Right.
Okay. So final topic, reviews and the little responses.
You're going to review like my talk this morning?
Bad.
Oh, thanks a lot. I did my best, man.
No, so the surveys, you know that.
Oh, I know these intimately.
I know you know them.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yes.
So I don't fill them out too often.
Oh, you
quite
suck.
Honestly,
you suck. That's
I know.
That's the price of admission. Shame
no,
on you.
No, the price of admission is the $2,000
no.
I spent.
No, you know what? No, it's you.
I knew this was going to be bad when I revealed the truth.
You can't complain then. And you can complain, trust me.
Yeah.
He has the potential to complain. But you can't, if you don't provide feedback, then I'm very disappointed in you, Josh.
I know. I knew it.
Because it's the one thing, I read the things. I was actually going to go to the other, so Star, one of the things I don't like about Star is they have a little green form, and they have two questions, and I know why they do it because they're trying to make it super easy to get
yeah.
feedback. And they have speaker content. No, they have speaker quality, and they have content quality, and they have 1 to 10.
Yeah,
and all they
I would do that. I
and all they ask for is the name of the talk, the presenter, and then you got to circle two boxes, and you're done. And they encourage people to then write comments on the back.
Yeah,
and then they send those. Believe it or not, Metacaster's feedback gets to the presenters. And presenters eagerly await for it in the mailbox if they're good.
Right.
If they want to get better, and they read those darn things, and they make adjustments. And when people don't fill them out...
As I hang my head in shame.
You can't get better. I mean, you're an agilist, for God's sake.
I get it. I understand from a speaker's side, but I am... And if I do fill them out, I don't answer any of the essay questions.
No?
I just do the ranking.
See, the numbers for SQE, the numbers mean very little to me.
Yeah.
Whether, and they average them out, and it's like, Bob, you are an 8.53.
Right.
And I'm like, great, I'm an 8.53. I look on the backs of all of these things. Yeah. I mean, so the sad news is probably one, again, using stars just as an example, probably one out of every 15 cards has a comment on the back.
Right.
So there's a lot of Josh Andersons in the world.
Boy, that's
right?
Bad news.
Yeah. And the overall feedback probably you get for an attendee. I usually count attendees, and then I count, you know, how much. Usually it's maybe, if you're lucky, you get maybe 60% turn-in rate, 50% turn-in rate.
So I think the moral of the issue is be a good attendee, unlike Josh, and fill out those cards.
Because it's not a cost thing. I know you pay big, good money, but... It's sort of the price of admission. You've heard me. I say this probably more than one time. If you've hung out with me at all in speaking, I think you have.
Yeah.
Where I'm pleading almost for feedback. I want the feedback. I don't agree with all the feedback. In some cases I'll crumble it up. And it's like you have no clue. I mean, I reserve the right to be a human being and react negatively to the feedback. But it sticks with me,
right?
And I do stuff with it. I make major adjustments and I make subtle adjustments.
Right. So yeah, be a good attendee. Fill out those forms. Help the speakers get better because that will help you get better.
Can
in
I wrap with one final
versions.
Topic? So you had a final topic.
When is final final? When is done done?
So what is the first part of a conference? What is, of the word conference?
Con.
Fer. What does confer mean?
Oh. To speak
out loud in the bathroom
with each other.
How often?
Once
and done. Out loud in the bathroom. I have a
so are you saying it's a discussion?
I think the highest value, we should have probably spent more time on this, but I want to leave, I think it's a really important point. And I don't do this because I'm such a flame, you know, goes back to your learning style. You're a fire hose guy. And so you're going to struggle with places. I'm a flaming introvert.
Right.
So it is painful for me.
It doesn't sound like it.
No, I'm a flaming introvert. When I'm at a conference and I'm not speaking.
Yeah.
So I will shy away from people. I will drop eye contact. I will walk away. I mean, I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
I can't help myself. And I miss, and I recognize that I miss wonderful opportunities to confer when I should, even amongst other speakers.
Right.
I don't do enough of that. So I think that's the most important. So your price of admission isn't the talk. It's not the question and the answers, I think. It's not the materials you bring.
It's not the swag.
It's not the swag.
Ooh, one final.
But it is the networking. Get business cards. Talk to people. And it's not just the information. It's your network.
Yeah.
Right? It's tweeting. Look at the social networking stuff. If you go to a conference, come back with a doubled network or a tripled network. You never know when you're going to use that. So please, Metacasters, confer at the conference. What's the final final?
The final final. So the final final is a rule I have with all of my teams. Every conference, the price of admission, is to not bring cookies back. No, but to have a lunch and learn and share ensure that it gets...
So there were some things we missed, and that's another one of them.
Man.
So we were rambling.
We were.
I was rambling. No,
yeah,
no. I was off point. I'll take it. And we missed... How do you bring it back and instantiate those ideas into your organization? You're right. Is another one of those things that we sort of missed.
That's a requirement for anybody we send.
Well, and it's the thing, not just lunch and... But bring... And don't lunch and learn with, I heard 800 things.
Yeah.
But what is the one or two or three things that you think would have high value impact into your organization and try to bring them back.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Absolutely. Metacasters, I hope this was useful. Conference is an important part of continuous learning. It's also an important part of, seeing Josh and Bob on the road.
Absolutely.
Right? So, yeah. So it's, you know, it's putting faces with voices.
Which can be good or bad.
And Josh, if you see Josh at a conference, you clearly know now that to look at the cookie table.
Yes.
And you'll see someone with cookies in each hand and one in his mouth. That is Josh Anderson.
In pockets in my backpack.
Exactly.
They are everywhere.
So, wrapping up.
Yes. I'm Josh Anderson.
Well.
Oh, wait. Did I jump the gun?
No.
I did.
To get hold of. Feedback. Man, we love feedback on
feedback,
topics.
My goodness. What is wrong with me?
So we love feedback. And in order to do
stumbled
that.
Stumbled out of the gate. And
I know,
this.
Josh. Come
Gosh.
On. Pick
okay.
it up.
So wrap it up. We are at metacast.com. That's meta-cast.com. And on Twitter, we are at meta-cast, all spelled out, because Twitter doesn't like non-alphanumeric characters. So please send feedback. Email, Twitter, website comments, you name it. We are ready to listen and react.
Absolutely. From beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina.
We'll try this again. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Shake.
And bake.
See ya.
Take care, everyone.